questions for our guest, Robert Schunk, or you can tell us about your Ouija board stories or some other ghastly thing. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. So let us move on now to the bridge to Body Island and have you tell us this story. The stage is yours, Robert.
All right. It's actually the longest story in the book, but I'll try to give you a short version. Around 1990, three friends in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, began experimenting with a Ouija board. One of them was actually working. He was taking care of a group of people who had something called Prader-Willi, which is a bizarre genetic defect that causes them to eat uncontrollably. Anyway, they had their evenings free, and they would fool with this Ouija board, and they set out to do some psychic experiments. They wanted to see if they could get some scrap of information that they could not possibly have known, something that would allow them to, that's something that they could look up and prove actually was factual, but they couldn't have known it. Anyway, the three of them tried different groupings. One of them would try moving the planchette with the other and get no results. Finally, one girl in the group of three began to get responses from the Ouija board, and they got the kind of like New Age kind of talk that you get from a lot of what claimed to be spirits. You know, they would talk about raising your consciousness, things like that. And they were communicating with about a dozen of them. But eventually, the guy who was leading it, his name is Eli, he's a friend of mine, he got bored with this, and he wanted to find some information, and he also wanted to hear a little more about somebody that they mentioned but wouldn't elaborate on. The spirits, or whatever it was that was giving them this information, they just would talk about somebody without ever mentioning his name. Well, eventually Eli got tired of this, and he told them that they were either going to give them the name of this person, or they were going to stop communicating altogether. So they were going to go on strike, so to speak, and all of the spirits vanished, except for one who called itself the spirit of the board. And it said that it would tell them the story. It didn't want to, and they had to do this over several sessions to get the whole story, but they eventually did. And it claimed that their Ouija board by using the Ouija board, they had come in contact with this man who had become a monster. He was born in the 1920s. He had been born an albino and was sent to an orphanage in Algiers, Louisiana. He used to run away from the orphanage, but he was blind and he couldn't get very far, and he became more and more violent. Eventually, when he was a teenager, he attacked one of the nurses with a big pair of scissors and left her terribly wounded, but he escaped to the railroad yards and began to ride the rails. Now, something happened to him. Maybe he was practicing voodoo, who knows what, but he became a monster, and he began to kill people. And when he killed them, he would remove their eyes and their tongue.
Oh, my God.
And he stitched them together into this monster that kept him company. It would move, and it acted as his eyes because he finally became blind. Now, as he turned into this monster, he wore a black jacket, like a navy peacoat, and he wore a big black slouch hat. He had long white hair, and he had glasses that were painted black. And He was an albino, so he had very, very white skin. And he carried a bag called the Sack of Gore, which was like a seaman's type sack, which was full of things that he cut out of people.
Oh, my God, Robert.
And the terrible thing about him was that he could only find you if you thought of his name. it turned you into a kind of a psychic beacon. And as long as you thought of his name or the name of the monster that accompanied him, he would start to search for you.
And if he found you?
Well, I guess you became part of the monster. I guess he took out your eyes and your tongue.
And part of the bag.
Or maybe you ended up, the choice pieces ended up in the bag. Well, when this story got out, the girl said, that's it. She has having nothing more to do with this. So they stopped with the Ouija board. But then a few odd things began to happen. She and the other guy who used the planchette with her both began to wake up at 3 in the morning every day. They were having terrible nightmares. I should mention that the way the monster alerts the man that they've come within range of their victim is he lets out a whistle, a piercing whistle, because that plays a part in what happened later. Anyway, the boy went off to a different part of the state, and one night he was asleep, and he heard a knocking on the door. And the voice of the girl told him to get up because they're going to go out to breakfast. But then he looked over at the clock, and he looked at the window, and it was pitch black out. And he realized that she wouldn't have traveled over 100 miles without telling them to go out to breakfast. And he spent the rest of the night lying on the floor, absolutely petrified with fear, as this something knocked on the door. He could see the shadow underneath the door, and eventually it left. So he had that little experience. And then the girl and her boyfriend, the other one of the three, were crossing this island, which is called Barker Stewart Island in Wausau, Wisconsin. Supposedly, some people call it Body Island because bodies used to wash up there from the Wisconsin River, because it was downriver from a sawmill, and whenever a lumberjack would drown, the body would end up here by Body Island. So this was the bridge to Body Island. They were crossing it when she heard a whistle. He didn't hear anything. But the whistle got louder and louder, and it's a railroad bridge, so maybe it was a railroad, but the whistle kept getting louder. He still heard nothing, and she eventually just lost it and went running off the bridge screaming, and they broke up soon after that.
Jeez. To the phones we go. You ready?
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, George?
Good. Thank you.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Hey, I would like to discuss, if you don't mind, your initial topic, which was the God Machine.
Yes.
Well, you know, I've never heard of it before, ever. Certainly heard no reference to it. But I'll tell you this straight up. It's being built right now. In the form that it was meant to take. It is very much like you described. It is a machine. That basically is a perpetual motion machine, to quote what you said earlier. Mm-hmm. Really what it is, it's an electromagnetic machine that fuses the electromagnetics of the Earth with the magnetic qualities of space, the plenum, and it is a self-perpetuating generator.
Who's building it?
A bunch of different contractors are. It's my design. Well, I can't say it's my design, because that means I would take credit for creating it, and I certainly didn't design this. It was a design that was brought to me.
You borrowed it, I guess.
No, not at all. It was brought to me. It was brought to me in a divination sort of aspect.
Hmm.
And prior to this, I had no involvement in divination or anything, and I really don't hold much regard for that word. But I do believe that there are greater intelligences, whether it's the future of our own human consciousness reaching back to us, giving us ideas, giving us insights, regardless of what it is. That was the source of this. And the prototype ran a string of Christmas lights.
Oh, really?
Now, I'll tell you this also. Let's go one step further.
So it's been tested.
Yes. And right now, the engine that's being built, the machine that's being built, it runs off the load bearing of a low voltage wire. And the actual engine that's being built at this moment is designed to fully power a 40,000 square foot facility. The relationship of the magnetics of it can be expanded to power plant capacity.
What does this apparatus cost to build in today's dollars?
You know what? I'll let you know when it's done. Right now, I can't even speculate on that because it's so far from being done.
Oh, really? How long do you think?
Well, I'll tell you this. It'll be released no later than 2011, in March of 2011.
Are we timing this for the Maya calendar?
It wasn't initially planned like that. And again, that date was brought to me in a similar fashion. But it definitely coincides with giving humanity an opportunity to do something about its destiny before it's too late.
All right. Hey, Robert, did you ever hear of Thomas Edison's machine that he was trying to build to communicate with the dead? But died before he finished it.
That was actually one of the stories I was interested in looking at, but, you know, there was just so much time that you could spend. And apparently there is a sketch that exists, but no one's really certain how much time he did spend on it. The belief was that the spirit world was very much like our world, but it was made of a much finer material, and that if there was a way of amplifying sound from it, we would be able to communicate with it that way. It's one of those things that's kind of a gray story. We don't really know the specifics. It's been told and retold so many times, though, that we feel that we know more about it than actually we do.
All right, next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
Hey, how you doing? My name's Russell.
Good, Russell.
Hi, Russell.
Hi. Well, I've got a little story I'd like to tell. It's kind of a spooky one. Something that happened to me. Mind you, I'm a third-generation truck driver. My family's been in the industry for years, and I was coming through a little highway on Oregon, Highway 26. It runs between Springfield, Oregon, to Ontario. And what happened one night, it was raining real hard, and I was out there by myself, so I thought, you know, and cruising along, getting kind of tired because of the rain, feeling a lot of fatigue. I wasn't running over or anything. I was just, you know, it was just a bad night. I started hearing someone on the CB talking, and they were talking to me, and I came back to them, and whoever it was said, "Come on, Rooster, let's get rolling, you know? Wake up, Rooster, let's get rolling." That was their words. And then a truck came flying by me, and I was, I talked to this person probably 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours. This person was right in front of me. And it was until I got out of the rainstorm, and after I got out of the rainstorm and daylight started hitting and I was almost up on my hours, that they said to me, yeah, you know, we had talked a lot, and I found out that this person was from the same town as my father was. Like I said, I'm third-generation trucker, and he knew my father. And we were just, you know, like I said, just a good chat for probably a good 2 to 3 hours about my dad and where they're from and all that. And at the very end of the conversation, he said, "Well, tell your father, Uncle Jimmy said hi." And, you know, probably not even 20 seconds after he made that comment, he just kind of disappeared. And I wasn't real sure, you know, I mean, this is a straightaway road, so you can see quite a ways. But, you know, I figured he took off and gone. And I talked to my dad about a week later. I finally gotten a hold of him, and I told him Uncle Jimmy had said hi, and he just said, "Oh, you got one of those Uncle Jimmy stories too, huh?" And apparently this Uncle Jimmy is somebody or an entity or something that's out there in that desert it's got like a ghost trucker.
That is so interesting, Russ.
Yeah, and it's like
Uncle Jimmy?
Yeah, Uncle Jimmy. What they call him. And that's what he said, "Tell your dad Uncle Jimmy said hi." And he told me the whole legend of Uncle Jimmy and everything.
I never heard of that.
Right. That was kind of interesting. And I had it happen. And I, I've never heard any other truck drivers talk about it. I've actually asked a few, and they said, no, they've never heard of it. But my dad knew this story because it was something that he experienced early on in his career.
Oh, that is interesting.
And it was, you know, that's something that happens a lot out here. When you drive at night, you know, sometimes you wonder if you're hallucinating or you see things, but you'll see people walking alongside of the road, and you know, they're not really there. You know? I mean, you just
don't pick them up.
Yeah. You see things out here, you know, and especially whenever you drive all night. And I mean, sometimes you say, well, maybe I'm just too tired or whatever, but I've seen a lot of strange things, but that has to have been the strangest thing I'd ever had happen to me.
Wow.
And it was, like I said, it was even stranger because of the fact that he knew my father. Mm-hmm. And you know, he told me quite a bit about my dad that somebody only close to my dad would have known. But we don't have any Uncle Jimmys in our family, and so. But that's it.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. That's a great story,
Robert. It is a great story. I love a character like that. I mean, now, there's in the back of my mind, I have been wanting to do a collection of truck driver stories for years.
Oh, my gosh.
They have the best stories.
Yeah. All you got to do tonight is tell them where to send them, and you will get hundreds.
I may do that.
Let's go next to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good evening, George. This is Mike from Georgia.
Hi, Mike.
I had a quick question for your guest there. Years ago, when that movie Three Men and a Baby came out, they were talking about there's a figure of a small boy next to a shotgun in the room there, in the living room, when they're all discussing the smell of that one diaper. And at the time, I used to own a repair shop, and I had a chance to use a VCR that would slow down frame for frame. And I did this, and I saw this little black figure of a small boy standing there in the room next to this shotgun leaning against the wall. And I was wondering if he's ever heard that story or actually slowed that movie down and actually seen that. And the story behind it was, there was apparently the boy was killed by a shotgun in that room or something. And the producer of the movie, when asked about it, said there's no way that they would have put a shotgun leaning against the wall in a movie about a baby and three men and stuff. So I didn't know if he'd ever heard that.
It is an incredible story. Have you heard it, Robert?
I have heard the story. I've heard that the figure can be seen. I've seen a still that's supposed to show it. I have heard stories ranging from that it was a cutout figure that was being used for something that was accidentally left in the scene. It's one of those odd stories that has been circulating for years, and I don't know enough about it to say anything definite, but I have heard it.
What's your favorite horror film?
It's got to be one of the George Romero zombie movies. I've watched all of them at least 100 times.
100 times?
At least. I'm a big George Romero fan.
I would guess so.
Yeah.
Do you have an email address you want to give out?
Sure. It is presidentsvampire@earthlink.net.
presidentsvampire@earthlink.net.
Yeah.
Okay, well, stay with us. We're going to be back in a moment. We're going to take final phone calls, share your stories or questions for our special guest tonight, and I'll be right back. Don't go away. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our special guest, Robert Schneck, right here on Coast to Coast. What other research are you up to these days, Robert?
Well, right now I'm looking into the relationship between American domestic architecture and spirits. So I'm looking into that. And I've also got a few stories that I've been running down, some very odd ones. It's odder than even some I've mentioned tonight.
Oh, yeah? You mean it actually can be odder than what you found?
Oh, yeah. It always gets stranger. I came across this one story, for example, about a minister out in in Kansas City, Missouri, who apparently preached good health through drinking human blood.
Oh, you got to be kidding.
No.
What's the matter with these people, Robert? Screw looses.
He was not only did he preach it, but he had a group of followers who called themselves the Samaritans.
who also preached it, and they were apparently helping themselves to these two young girls to maintain their health.
Gosh, sick people. Let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Is this for Wendy?
I guess if that's you, that's you.
I'm so excited to talk to you, George. I love your show. I have a Ouija board story.
Okay.
It was my first and only ever Ouija board experience, and I was in a dorm room my first year of college in 1987 with a couple roommates and, you know, a bunch of people doing the whole party thing, and a group of people were playing with the Ouija board. And towards the end of the night, I was kind of bored, so I asked if I could play. It kind of piqued my interest. I'd never done it before, and so they said, yeah, go ahead and jump in, and whenever I'd put my fingers on the thing with everybody else, it would just stop. And then it started saying, no, no. It just kept going to the no. So they'd throw me off. They'd say, Wendy, the only thing that's changed is you. Take your fingers off. So I'd take my fingers off. They would play, and everything was fine. So then I'd say, well, let me try to jump in again. So I tried to jump in again, and it kept saying, no, no, no. And so finally, they said, you know, we don't want you to play anymore. You're ruining the game. So I said, okay. So I just sat back, and I watched, and they were talking to spirits and everything. And then I said, why don't you ask it why it won't play with me? And so they asked it, and it spelled out G-O-D. And then one of the other people that were sitting around the Ouija board said, is God protecting her? And it said, yes.
That's interesting.
How creepy is that? So I've, like, never, ever been around a Ouija board ever since. Like, I was so freaked out that, and the only thing that I can think of, because, you know, obviously I don't think I'm, like, more spiritual or religious than anybody else that was sitting around there, but I do know that I'm extremely sensitive. So I don't know if it was, like, my spirit guide or, you know, something that was blocking it so that I wouldn't be, you know, subjected to any negative energy. That's the only thing I can think.
Robert?
Well, that may be. I really don't know. I can't get that planchette to move. I mean, I could tie it to a truck hitch, and I can't get that planchette to move.
Maybe you're being protected, too.
I don't know. I have a the friend of mine who had the experience with the monster I won't name. He can't get the thing to move either.
Really?
Yeah, we're just some people just don't seem to have it in us. Somebody told me it's because I can't relax.
Yeah, that could be with me. But I can't believe that it spelled that out and everything.
Well, that's the thing about Ouija boards. They tend to throw that kind of thing at you, and you wonder about it for years and years.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to figure it out ever since.
Well, you know, it's the kind of thing where I would let it go. It happened. It was weird, and like so many paranormal things, it can seem a lot more important than it actually is.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually one of the problems with the paranormal is people will have a little odd experience, and it will completely change the direction of their life.
Right.
And it shouldn't, because it's just a weird little thing.
Right. No, I love weird little things.
Oh, I'm not saying that this has been the seminal event of your life.
No.
I'm just saying that it has been for some people, though.
Yeah.
They'll have a dream. They'll see a ghost. Maybe they'll have a psychic experience of some kind, and that's it. Their life is altered, and I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay,
definitely.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
Hey, George, I got a Ouija board story for you, but before that, I wanted to say thank you to you. My father recently passed away, and it seemed like the only peace or escape he got from his illness was when he was able to listen to you. So,
well, our condolences, but I'm glad we gave him a little solace, I guess, in his last days.
Thank you. Hey, the Ouija board story, I want to tell you, I've never been into paranormal stuff or oddball stuff, but in 1976, I was 10 years old, and my older brothers had their friends over, and they were playing with a Ouija board on a coffee table. And they got very excited when this thing started to spell things out. And it was ended up spelling the word flame. And the board began to rotate. And they stood up And, you know, you could tell everybody was kind of, well, I guess to use the terms now, freaking out. And I was, you know, just sitting over on the couch watching. The board began to spin so fast that the board caught on fire. And they, one of the guys, one of the friends there, ended up covering up and putting the flame out. But it burned a hole through the board and actually scorched the top of the coffee table. And it made such an impression on me is because I was so afraid of this thing that, or what had happened. I ended up sleeping on the floor of my parents' bedroom for the next week or so. But it's the one thing in my life I've never had an explanation for or can't explain. And I'm usually a very rational person. But this was, you know, one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. Nobody was touching the board. They were all standing back at this time. And the board just rotated at such a speed that it caught on fire.
I've never heard of one like that, Robert.
No, that is one of the most dramatic Ouija board stories I've ever heard. You know, the problem I would have with how a lot of people would interpret that is they would say there was something demonic at work. But I would consider look at the Philip experiment. Look at the Philip effect. Is it possible that instead of spirits or demons, that it was actually psychokinesis generated by the boys taking part in this experiment with the Ouija board, that the word flame came along and that inspired them on some level to make that thing happen? I only say it because the spirits are hypothetical, the demons are hypothetical, but we know people were there. If PK is a real phenomenon, then possibly they made it happen.
Next wild card line, it's your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George?
Yes, sir. Hi, thanks for calling.
How you doing, sir?
Good.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Hey, Robert, I appreciate being on the show.
Hi.
I have a Ouija board experience for y'all. I was in the Navy back in Gulf War time on a ship, and during off-duty hours, to give us something to do, we started playing the Ouija board, and we started playing with it a lot. And it got to where it was working like really, really good. And what happened was we were really skeptical about it working on its own, or, you know, what was going on with it or why it was moving. So, you know, we accused each other of moving it and this and that. Well, what happened was is we got the fourth person. We had three people touching it, and the fourth person would ask the questions to it. And then what happened was we got to realize that the fourth person, you know, wasn't touching it, and the other people, we blindfolded them, right? And then the fourth person would ask the questions to the board that the other three people didn't know, like, what's my mother's maiden name and where did I go to high school? And the thing was able to spell it out, you know what I mean? Like they couldn't have pushed it to where it was supposed to go because they didn't know the answers.
That's interesting. That, you see, now that also, to my mind, suggests that there's something psychic going on rather than spirits having to be involved, that there was some kind of telepathy perhaps involved, which actually the people I was talking about who contacted that monster, they performed similar experiments where my friend would write a question down on a piece of paper, not show it to them, and ask them for an answer. Now, they never got an exact answer, but he did get things like when he would ask a question that would have a numerical answer, and they would get a number instead of a word as an answer. Uh-huh. So something might have been going on.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, that's my theory on psychics, is somehow, and if you say, you know, psychokinesis, I haven't really thought of that, but my theory on it was somehow a spirit was channeled through the person that was not on the board, and it was able to answer the revealed on the board, and that's how I believe psychics are able to read people's minds, is they're able to channel a spirit and them being the Ouija board. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the traditional spiritualist explanation, that the person running the person who is touching the Ouija board is acting as a kind of a medium, and that a spirit is acting through them. I just throw out the other one. I just throw out the possibility of it being a psychic phenomenon because, again, we do know about the people. The people are really there. The spirit is hypothetical. We don't know about that. So I like to work with what we know. And there is some evidence, and parapsychology has done a lot of work, and there is some evidence that people are capable at times of telepathy and psychokinesis. So I'm more comfortable with that as an explanation. There have been examples, of course, of spirits that really do seem to point to survival, and really do seem to point to minds surviving after death, but I don't think that needs to be used as an explanation for a lot of these things.
I see.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate you being on the program. Time for a few more calls. Let's go east to the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, George?
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hey, George and Bob. Hey, fantastic show tonight.
Thank you.
I'm from the Salem, Gloucester area. Before I get started, I have some to add to those stories you had told. Before I get started, could you please consider putting Sean Castile on the show sometime? He's investigated a lot of stories like this, and he's even written for After Dark.
Yeah, he sure has. I think we've had him on a long time ago.
I believe he hasn't been on. I've been in contact with him.
Ever?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Not that I know of, but would you please consider it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And to add to the Gloucester story of the militia, the militia was actually led by Colonel Appleton out of Ipswich.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yes, and they were sent to Cape Ann, which is now Cape Ann. I guess it was Gloucester back then.
It was still Cape Ann.
Excuse me?
It was Cape Ann. You're right. In fact, a lot of people call it the Devils of Cape Ann.
Well, and the only reason they called it Devils was because they didn't know what aliens, I believe it to be from Raymond Fowler's writings, aliens, because they didn't know how to interpret it any other way back then. So it's very possible it was alien, you know.
Well, if it was,
way
then
you want to believe, but
if it was, they were dressed like 18th century Frenchmen and Indians, and they carried muskets.
That's strange. And I had heard in the story, too, that they had fired upon them, but their guns would not shoot.
That's right. In fact, at one time, one of the devil's militia fired on the Babson, and they recovered the lead ball. They dug it out of a tree, and saved it. So there
Incredible.
May be a ball fired by the devil's militia in somebody's attic. There are a lot of Babsons in that area. They should all look in their attic and see if they have it.
Absolutely. There's quite a few in Ipswich, I believe, too.
Oh, yeah.
Still the family land. In fact, the Appleton Farm is still there. Now, Salem, the Salem of City, there were very few hangings actually there. Old Salem Village is now Danvers.
Right.
If you watch... There's a movie on running on cable now starring David Caruso, and it's called Sessions 9. The hill that they actually hanged him on, later they had built a sanitarium up there. And that movie is about them renovating that sanitarium. So that's the hill. But it was old Danvers Village, old Salem Village was Danvers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had a friend that lived down there, and... He lived there for years, single. I was with him the night he met his wife, prior to October of 92, which would have been the 300th year anniversary of the trials right there in Danvers, the first church. And I always wanted them to move up to New Hampshire where I was and get out of... I always felt something bad. It was the 300th year anniversary that something bad karmically would happen, you know, as the story goes. But and the only two people I ever used to tell that to are now dead. It was a murder-suicide October of that year. And but I've been dying to tell that story on Coast to Coast for a long time.
Well, thank you, David. Appreciate that. And you have, and millions have heard it. These are great stories, Robert.
Oh, yeah. Well, once you start digging, George, it never stops. It is like an inexhaustible gold mine.
Wild card line, it's your turn. Hello there.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I'm Carol from Windsor, Ontario.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, and I have a good story for you, Robert.
Oh, great.
It's a Ouija story. And to this day, it still bothers me. There was about five of us, and we were in our early 20s. And for one night, for something to do, the friend's home that we were at, she says, oh, I got a Ouija board. Let's play with it. And we did, and we were giggling and laughing and thought nothing of it. You know, like it was moving. We said, oh, are you moving it? No, I'm not moving it, you know, and we're going on. Well, the girl whose home we were at, she said, I'm going to ask if there's any spirits here. As soon as she said that, the picture hanging on the wall, and this is true, it didn't fall. It slammed to the floor. We got up screaming. I was screaming so loud, I had tears in my eyes and my heart was pounding. I said, never again. We learned the next day that the girl ended up throwing the Ouija board out because that night, and she's not fallible to this. She said she was sleeping and she was awoken up, and this is so true. There was a boy standing at the end of her bed. She said it like he had Victorian clothes on. Said it wasn't looking at her, but it was looking in the mirror, and a sly, like a half smile. She, for 3 weeks, she slept with her mother.
I literally slept with her mother. I don't blame her. Robert, we are rapidly out of time. Again, the book, The President's Vampire, where do you get it?
Anomalistbooks.com or Amazon.
Amazon always has everything.
Yes.
They sure do. Robert, you are a phenomenal guest. You're welcome back anytime you want.
Oh, my pleasure, George. I have so many more stories to tell, and I'd love to do it.
We got to time these things for creepy Halloween nights with you, too.
Oh, huh? Anytime you say, I'm here.
Okay, Robert. Thanks again. You take care of yourself.
My pleasure, George, and thank you.
What a great storyteller. He reminds me of a different version of a Lionel Fanthorpe, doesn't he? For Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.